Hello and welcome to the Mick Clifford podcast with the Irish Examiner. My guest today is a genealogist, which I suppose in some ways is you might describe one aspect of the work as being perhaps a detective of the genes. Anyway, Maeve Mullen is head of research at Finders International, which tracks down people often to deliver them good news that they have inherited some money, perhaps. But it does much else besides, and we're going to talk about that. Maeve, you're very welcome.
Thank you very much, Mick. Delighted to join you today.
Genealogy. What is it and how did you become a genealogist, Maeve?
So genealogy is, I suppose, the art of collecting up genealogical records, births, deaths, marriages, census records, probate records, every other type of record in order to collate a family tree. And how I got interested initially in genealogy was that my dad had always been interested, and he had done research into his family tree the hard way before the internet was invented, with a pencil and paper and looking at microfilms and old dusty books in libraries and repositories. So I suppose from an early age, I was aware of him doing research into family history. And that's where it started for me. Yeah.
You didn't start out your working life as a genealogist, I believe. You were working in IT, was it, initially?
Yes, absolutely. I did a degree in computer applications in DCU and went to work in Bank of Ireland. And I was there for many years, loved my work in the IT centre and in lots of different locations around Dublin in IT. But I started doing a night class in UCD in Irish genealogy, loved that also. And then when an opportunity came up to take redundancy from the bank, I really wanted to do something different, and I thought I would give the genealogy a go. So at that stage, I also, when I left Bank of Ireland, I did a master's in Irish history in Maynooth, which is fantastic as the background context for genealogy. So the history is the times through which people were living, and I suppose it puts more flesh on the bones of the stories of their lives. So yeah, that's how I got started.
Very good. And one thing that I'd be curious about in the first instance is, were I to ask you to go back through my family tree, how many generations do you reckon, generally speaking, you'd be able to go back? And what is the furthest you've ever managed to go back?
Well, I suppose you can go back and back and back for some families. In Ireland, births, deaths and marriages, the civil records started to be recorded in 1864. So every family can get back that far. So they can go back to the 1911 census and then 1901 census, and certainly births, deaths and marriages from 1864. Prior to that, there are church records. So depending on the religion of the family and depending on the parish in which they were living, the records vary when they start and finish and how available those records are. So you can be lucky and unlucky. It really varies for every family how far you can get back. There's also an absolute wealth of other records, land records, Griffith's valuation, tithe allotment records, memorials from the Reg of Deeds. There's a whole Aladdin's cave, I'm going to call it, for people who are interested in genealogy. There's a wealth of records there. And more and more records are coming online. So if you have researched your family tree a few years ago, it's always worthwhile coming back and giving it a rattle again, because something else or something new may have come online, and it's worth just checking that out again.
Yeah, one thing, you mentioned history, and it's just a brief thing I remembered, and it might be completely off beam, but at the outset of the Civil War, when the garrison was in the forecourts and Michael Collins shelled the forecourts, my recollection is that people suggest one of the huge issues that arose at that point is the resultant fire, whatever happened there, one way or the other, that a huge volume of records, I think relating to births and deaths and that, were destroyed. Have you any knowledge of that? And does that have a big impact on the capacity to go back before, say, 1922?
Yes. Well, I suppose just to be really clear, the records that went up in smoke were mostly Church of Ireland church records and probate records. So wills and grants of probate admin, copies of those, they were lost. But we have a full set of births, marriages and deaths from 1864. So those records were not impacted by that fire at all. And yes, it is very disappointing that those records were lost, but that's the challenge, is to gather as many pieces of the jigsaw puzzle as are available and to put them back together again. And it's always worth checking, even though a lot of wills and probates were lost, it's always worth checking with the National Archives in case a will or a copy of a will or a copy of a probate was in, for example, a solicitor's office or in somebody's private collection or in their private papers, and then has made its way to the National Archives. So yes, we lost. You could sit and cry and sob about the records that were lost, but the challenge is really, okay, so how do we get around those gaps, and let's work with all the records that we do have and we do have access to. Yeah.
Yes. No, it was just, I suppose, from your school days and the teaching of history and when that was mentioned, I suppose it was perhaps delivered in a way as if to say a big chunk of the recorded history was done away with. But then, like a lot of things to do with, particularly around that time, things can be over-dramatised somewhat. Maeve, family tree is a hobby and that for people, but you're working for Finders International, which basically finds people, and obviously it's a business, people are willing to pay to go back through various family trees. What is the main thrust of your business at Finders International?
So mainly the work that we do is for solicitors. Two scenarios where a solicitor is administering an estate for a deceased person, and if that person made a will, there may be somebody named as a beneficiary in the will who doesn't live at the address where they used to live, or maybe there was no address given in the will at all, and the solicitor is having difficulty tracking down that person and finding them in order to give them their share of the inheritance. So that's one scenario. The other scenario is where the deceased person died intestate. They didn't make a will at all. And in that instance, we are asked to confirm the next of kin for the deceased person. Other work that we do, our sister office in London often sends us requests to locate Irish family for somebody who has passed away, and they say they weren't married, they didn't have any children, but it's known that they were born in Ireland or that their parents were born in Ireland. And in that instance, sometimes those cases can be very urgent if the deceased person has just passed away and their funeral hasn't happened yet. So we are, I suppose, endeavouring to locate family as quickly as possible so that they can instruct an undertaker and that the person's funeral can go ahead, you know.
And have you, for example, done cases like that where somebody is contacted and told your grand aunt or whomever that the undertaker services are required?
Yes, absolutely. It's not unusual at all. And in some instances, family really want to travel to that person's funeral as well. And so I suppose by us contacting them, it facilitates that happening, that they can actually go to this person's funeral. And otherwise, there might not have been very many people at the funeral, you know. But needless to say, during COVID, Irish people couldn't travel to the UK for funerals like that. But at least they could be in contact with the hospital in the UK or be in contact with the council who were arranging the person's funeral, and maybe have a, you know, at least then they would know where they were buried, you know, for the purposes of putting a headstone or some kind of a memorial. Or in quite a lot of instances, there are a cremation maybe arranged, and then family can go and collect those ashes at a later time and bring them back to Ireland and perhaps scatter them, you know, where that person was born, on a farm or beside the sea in Clare or wherever it was that they were from. Yeah.
Would this sometimes be people, for example, who may not have been in contact with the person who's just deceased for many years?
Exactly. Within a family, there is often a story or family lore of, well, a uncle, Paddy, went to America and we got some letters for a few years, but then nobody ever heard from him again. Or Auntie Mary went to the UK and kept up contact for a little while, but then lost contact. There might have been some kind of a row in the family that precipitated that there wasn't any further communication. But actually, what seems to be more usual is that sometimes emigrants in a new country, that they stay in touch with their family in their home country while their parents are alive. But once their parents are gone, there's a connection lost with their home place. And then there's a whole variety of reasons why, you know, who knows, life just gets busy and people move on, and if you haven't been in touch in years, it becomes more difficult maybe to get in touch. Or you know, the classic song from Clare to Here, maybe they feel that they didn't do as well or weren't as successful in life as they had hoped, and then they don't want to, you know, broadcast that at home where they're from or whatever. Yeah.
It is a very interesting scenario. Like, I mean, I know myself, for example, families who a family member, nobody might have heard from, they immigrated, heard from them for 20 or 30 years. And I suppose from the point of view of your work is a classical scenario where they might get in touch when a person is deceased. But it's an interesting scenario. In you turn up for the funeral and you have this gap of 30 years when you never knew what was going on. You can imagine the whole emotions and the narratives and the stories that are behind this. It's I suppose it's just the nature of the country too, in terms of immigration and the role it played and that sort of thing.
Absolutely.
On a more mundane level, Maeve, do you get many requests from, I say Americans because they're the ones who are most known for it, but presumably you'd also find people in Britain or Australia looking back through the family tree in terms of their immigrant families and that sort of thing?
That research for emigrants who would like for their family tree to be put together, we don't do that type of work. Our work is all for probate and legal purposes or regarding property matters. So, it's mostly solicitors that we work on behalf of.
To know what's really happening, subscribe to the Irish Examiner today at irishexaminer.com/subscribe.
Okay, and tell me about wills. As you say, in the first instance where you're asked to locate a relative.
Yes.
What, for example, I contact you as a solicitor in let's say London, for instance, and want you to find this guy Mick Clifford, who is believed to be a second cousin and the only living relative of the deceased, and is mentioned in the will. What's your starting point in a scenario like that?
Our starting point is to know information about that person as the starting point. So the solicitor will be in contact with a family member. They'll have a client who is the person, the administrator or the executor or executrix of the will. And they may not know this missing person's date of birth, but they will know who their parents were and who possibly their brothers and sisters were and roughly where they were born. So we establish initially their birth record. And with that, we have their date of birth. And family members may have an old address for this person. So they might have letters or they might have an address book that says that Mick Clifford was living at number 33 Main Street, Birmingham, but the letter is dated 1961 or 1973 or whatever. So that's really where we start with that kind of a request. One very interesting case that we did last year was exactly that scenario. Was that, so Mick Clifford is the address that we have from is number 33 Main Street, Birmingham. And the solicitor had written to that address and had no reply. So we did our research, and we have a network, a team of reps who are retired policemen or policewomen in the UK, and in Ireland they are retired Gardaí, and they can go and visit and knock on somebody's door if we're not if we haven't gotten a reply from a letter. And when our rep went and knocked on the door for Mick Clifford at number 33 Main Street, Birmingham, there was a totally different family living there. They had never heard of Mick Clifford, but they said, "We're new to the area and there's a lady two doors up and she's lived here forever, and you should talk to her." And when our rep talked to her, she said, "Oh, Mick Clifford lives at number 38, not at number 33. And Mick Clifford is still hale and hearty and living at number 38. And it turned out that I think it was an address book that this had, that the initial information had been taken from, and it was handwritten and it had gotten smudged. So the 38 looked like a 33.
Right, that was an easy one. No, that was ready. that turned out easily enough. But nobody in the new neighbourhood had ever heard of this famous Mick Clifford,
yes,
who was here 30 years beforehand. I mean, without that, for instance, then, like, for instance, do you head for, if you have a location, do you find all the Cliffords who were born within a particular time in a particular area, or how do you narrow it down?
Well, we would already have done research to determine Mick Clifford's birth record in Ireland, and then we will search for marriage records and death records and really try to hone in on a particular area. It's great when family can say, yes, he was definitely in Birmingham. So we're not looking in all of the UK. But if it turns out that Mick Clifford has passed away, then it's his family then that we need to get in contact with. So from his death record, we would be trying to locate his grave details, and possibly a family member would be the informant on the death record. And if there is maybe, you know, yes, it can get more complicated if it's not a family member who's the informant, or if the family member who's the informant has moved away from the house that they were living in and they've now emigrated to Australia. And so, yes, that, like, you're right. Research, it can grow legs on occasion. Yeah.
What, Maeve, is the scenario? Say the person you're looking for is deceased. Does the legacy and the will pass on to that person's next of kin or what?
That absolutely depends on the wording in the will. So the wording in the will may dictate that if Mick Clifford is deceased, his children do not inherit.
Right.
It may actually say Mick Clifford or his descendants. Do you know?
Supposing it's not specified in the will that in the event of me or whomever is deceased, if it's not specified that it pass on to their descendants or it not pass on to their descendants, if that element of it isn't specified in the will.
It doesn't pass on, but I suppose
right.
You would need to actually read every will.
Yeah, yeah.
And identify whether his descendants were entitled or
right.
not.
Right. And presumably so, Maeve, you have come across scenarios where a different Mick Clifford gets the phone call and told, guess what, you haven't won the lotto, but you've got a nice little legacy here that you never saw coming.
For sure. That's the challenge in our genealogy. I suppose our due diligence requires that we will make sure that it is the correct Mick Clifford. So at the start of any conversation, we would typically send an approach letter, and then the person phones us back, and then we have to make sure that they're the right Mick Clifford, that we're on the right track, that their parents were, Patrick and Mary, and that their grandparents were Thomas and Ellen, and you know that it's the correct Mick Clifford and not a different Mick Clifford.
Presumably you've come across cases where this has come as a complete surprise, if not shock, to someone, that they were due money, basically.
Yes. Most people are surprised. Sometimes people are somewhat expecting a call that, and they're not that surprised. And when they get a call from us, they nearly say, oh, is it my Uncle John who has passed away? Or is it my Auntie Betty who has passed away?
Right.
But most people are surprised, because most people are not expecting a phone call.
And also, Maeve, something I've seen there, we have a scenario whereby we have unclaimed estates, which presumably are estates that are there from people who died without making any will, and there has been no claim on them. I just looked at the website. I think it's a UK-based website, even though it includes a lot of addresses in Ireland. It runs into the thousands and it goes back decades. And would you get calls from anybody who might see a name and that and see... is there any way I'm related to someone there?
Exactly. So unclaimedestates.ie is a website that we set up, and it has a list of bona vacantia cases from the UK on it. So the Treasury in the UK have this bona vacantia list that if somebody passes away and they don't have any next of kin, but the state is holding funds for them, they put their names on a list, and anybody who is related can make contact. So we have that list because those are people who were born in Ireland. And sometimes we do have members of the public contacting us because they see a name on the list. I suppose if a member of the public sees a name on the list and they know that somebody with that name, Michael Byrne they had a great uncle who went to the UK, and maybe the area matches up as well, then we can take a look at if they are actually connected to this person. But I suppose we would need some background information as to how they feel they are connected to them. Do you know?
Yeah. Have you ever come across a case where somebody contacted you on that basis and it turned out they were, and that they were entitled to be a beneficiary of the will?
No.
Yeah,
actually.
It's a long shot. I looked at the estate, just a bit of research for this. The unclaimed estates. Yes. And there were three Cliffords mentioned in the when you filter down the list. But then when I clicked on it, there was none. So I think they might have saw me coming and they ran for cover or something, like, you know.
Or maybe they rolled off.
It is an interesting one that people would see a name and think that perhaps they might be in line for a few bob or something. The thing that strikes me, Maeve, is there's a whole treasure trove of human stories, as there so often is, I suppose, with death and with immigration and with loss of contact and that, in your work. And I saw elsewhere that you mentioned a couple of one. There was a really nice story I thought about about a man who passed away in a hospital in the UK, and there was no next of kin on file, and nobody visited him while he was in hospital, and there's no next of kin there, and you were asked to research his background, and you were able to locate his mother's grave.
Yes,
because he wanted to be buried with her.
Yes, we're very proud of that case, actually, because we received that inquiry on a Thursday afternoon, and by Tuesday morning we had located his mother's grave. And had we not located the grave, he would have been buried, you know, in an unmarked grave, you know, not with his mother and his grandparents, actually. So it was a whole big team effort. Nearly the whole team in Finders were working on that case, and it turned out as a really great result. Yeah.
And I believe you had another one whereby you were asked to find a woman whose name was on the title deeds of a house and with a man, and the man had passed away, and you were asked to locate her, presumably on the basis that she would have been entitled to the house, on the basis that her name had been on the title deeds, and you actually located her.
That's right. The lady in question had been engaged to this man, but when they were going out years and years ago, her family did not approve of the relationship. So she moved away. She took their advice, moved away, met somebody else and got married and had children and had a very full life. And I think she did think of her ex-fiancé from time to time, because when my colleague contacted her, she immediately knew who she was speaking of, and she was very sad to hear that he had passed away. And she, I suppose, she had hoped that and assumed that he had married somebody else and had children and had the same life as she had had. So she was quite sad to hear that he had never married, and that he had never taken her name off the deeds to the house. She certainly didn't want any inheritance out of that. She was very happy for us to give her contact details back to the solicitor, so that the solicitor would sort out the paperwork and the deeds and all of that.
It is a fascinating view into kind of stories, isn't it?
It is.
That you have through your work.
We find it fascinating Every day there's something else that's very interesting. And I have to say, I am one of the very lucky people who I really love my job. And there is a kind of an element of a investigation and solving a puzzle and the challenge. And sometimes you can be researching and digging and trawling. And then finally, there's a eureka moment. So those eureka moments keep you going for all of the due diligence.
I tell you, Maeve, if you ever have done a mind to go writing fiction or anything, you've you have a lifetimes of material there in the office.
Exactly. Oh, well, you never know. You never know. I might do that. Yeah. But yes, for sure. There's lots and lots of brilliant stories. And it's just real. It's real life, you know.
That's the thing.
Just people's real lives. Yeah.
Maeve Mullen from Finders International, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks, Mick.
That's it for today, folks. I'd also like to thank our engineer, JJ Vernon. Thank you for listening. Get us on all the usual platforms and get us every week. And we will see you soon. Take care.